This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy, and I'm here today with Heat Software talking about endpoint security protection.
My name is Matthew Walker. I'm VP of Northern Europe at Heat Software, and today, as Ian said, I'd like to discuss some aspects of endpoint security.
We have a challenge for enterprises at the moment. They've secured the core of their systems, but they've lost complete control of endpoint. How do businesses start to re-establish security control of the endpoint devices?
So we look at things in several aspects, and the first aspect essentially is to try and discover what you have, and by that I mean what's connected to your network or a network. Now obviously things come and go, but what you can do is start to build a profile of what devices are connected, and once you are able to tell what's connected, you can then start to look at what software is running as well, or rather what applications are on those endpoints. And once you have a visibility of that, you can start to make some decisions about how you want to run your IT or what you might want to change in terms of policy. That then leads you into effectively to work out what policies you want for your endpoints, and then it's a case of working out the technology that you need to implement those policies. Once they're implemented, also by the way, often you can do things in audit only mode, so you can just check rather than stop before you implement policies. You implement the solution, you then review how everything is now working, and then you implement those policies that you've decided. And that is a continuous thing.
I can take you back to that discovery phase. One of the challenges organisations face is they probably have no clue what's connected to their network these days. It's not just about the devices users bring into the office that they're using for work, but it's the toys they got for Christmas that they bring in to show off to their colleagues. People bringing Alexa devices in just to show what they've got. But then there's the televisions and the fridges and the dishwashers in the office. How challenging is that discovery event for IT security teams today?
Well, I think it is, because a lot of the options that companies have to see and discover what is out there, they will be looking for certain types of devices, maybe printers, routers, laptops, servers. But modern technology is such, there is so many different types of devices now. It's hard to keep up with what's been attached to the network. In most cases, there are solutions enough to find out pretty much everything that is attached to your network, but obviously it can come and go. But once it is on and you can recognize it, what you want to do is be able to keep a log of that and recognize that it may be one-off device, or it may be that you can identify the device but not the serial number. But all of these things are the challenges for organisations, because once you know what's there, then you can do something about it. And what we find is a lot of customers actually don't know what's on their network, and we do a discovery exercise and prove to them that they think they've got 10,000 devices and actually it's 15,000, and there's a Windows XP box which is running a manufacturing system which they didn't think was connected to the network but actually has got connected somehow. It hasn't been patched for years, it's not possible to patch it, and they're kind of, okay, scratch their heads, we didn't know that was attached. So it's going a long way to giving customers the opportunity to see what's actually on the network.
If I go back 20, 25 years, one of the things we did was we segmented networks. And that's because we didn't have the bandwidth to run as we do today. But also we were limited on the length of network cabling and everything else. With IoT coming on stream and this explosion of devices in the office, are customers actually going back to doing network segmentation? Because that at least gives them the opportunity to create highly sensitive networks, maybe for board members, less sensitive networks for other people, or has that boat gone?
No, I think you're making a very good point, actually, because it's a bit like the Wild West at the moment. People can bring anything they want, attach anything. There's Wi-Fi here, 4G. And, you know, you can impose restrictions on what does connect. I mean, let's face it, you go into a cafe, you automatically connect. You go into an office building where we are now, for example, and you need a secure password to get access. So I think it will go that way more, because essentially it's about the control aspect. And it's not that you want to control what people are doing. It's you want to make sure that things are secure, because the nasty stuff that's out there is taking advantage of weaknesses in both infrastructure and endpoints, but it's got to get a way in. It can only work if it's allowed to get access and it can install itself. If you prevent it from getting in, that's half the battle, and half the battle is making sure that you only allow devices to connect to your network that you want to connect. And so, to your point, it may be you have separate networks.
If we take a slightly wider view and look at security on the endpoint devices, are you seeing companies turning around and buying software security and putting it on end-user devices? Or are they relying on the end-users getting security software when they buy their new laptop or device?
In our world, we are dealing mostly with the SMBs upwards, mid-tier and large organisations, large public sector, large banks. Definitely the larger organisations are implementing a security policy. They have done for a long time. What we are finding is, whereas things like device control were absolute given. So everybody would have a device control solution on what could be physically connected to PCs, laptop servers in the network. Historically, what software could run, i.e. applications, that was never restricted as much because it was always felt it was too hard to manage that whitelisting of applications. But we are definitely seeing an increase in that now, certainly in public sector, because they have a guidance now to the public sector which says you should have some sort of application control. So we're definitely seeing that. And although policy-wise it's a little bit harder to implement, I think there's no alternative to doing it because it's the only surefire way you can stop malware from running by basically not whitelisting it. So that is definitely becoming more prevalent in organisations.
One of the challenges of whitelisting with end-user devices, of course, is everybody has their favourite cloud service. Some of those may be secure, some of those may be less secure. The whitelisting engines and the processes out there don't make it very easy for a company to turn around and detect service A, which it doesn't trust, and instead of just blocking it, saying to the user, as a company, we use service B. Service B we believe to be more secure. We will provide you with access to it. You need to move your data to there if you wish to continue to use cloud. Are you seeing that level of thinking coming along, or are we still some way off actually helping the users move to a more secure set of cloud services?
I think that's a very good point. I think we're not quite there yet. I don't think there's in place a thinking from either necessarily organisations or even to some extent the vendors to this degree. We're looking at what runs on the endpoint, what you're attaching to and how you interact with cloud and cloud services is probably the next step. We have a cloud service management solution, so we have a set of security positions, so to speak, between how people use our cloud service management solution. So one of the things he coming together was to look at this endpoint security with offerings a service management solution, and they are on one side your end users are a problem in the security world, and then in service management your end users are your customers. So trying to blend that, giving more IT services to end users but at the same time trying to make it secure for them to do that. So yes, I think this is probably a very topical area.
How many companies actually work with their users? I mean, IT has always had a fairly, shall we say, stressful relationship with its end user community. IT security is very much a case of do as we say in a lot of organisations. It tends to be very prescribed in what users can do. Do you see a change in approach here to engaging the end user in the security conversation? Or is that a level of maturity that we still struggle to get?
I think it's a challenge if I think about certain organisations. So in public sector, people are more understanding that if there's a policy, they will fix it, if it was a large government ministry. If you take a scientific research organisation with people who are doing a lot of research, very highly educated people, they might want to challenge the security policy much harder, will be much more questioning of it. And that puts the IT security people, not just the IT people, very much under scrutiny because they're having to justify why they would restrict or implement a policy. And I still think we've got some way to go. I think organisations do struggle with trying to balance the reality of what's out there now in all the nasty amounts of, you know, extortion of various types with giving their users the freedom to use IT, which at the end of the day, what it's there for is to help people do their jobs. So IT are trying to help people get on with their jobs and IT security are trying to make it secure, but in some ways that compromises. And it's difficult for organisations still sometimes to, I say sell, but to persuade their users that things are for a reason.
When we look at end users, they are the primary infection point, particularly from their home machines. We haven't seen malware, such as ransomware, make that peer-to-peer jump. Going to happen this year, it's just a surprise we haven't seen it big time so far. How do we get companies to make that move of protecting all the devices a user owns? Because it's not just about protection, it's about when that user's infected, making sure that user is able to clean all their devices at home as well as whatever they bring into the office.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a big challenge for companies because a lot of employees now are either working from home using their own devices to connect. They might be approved, they might not be approved. I don't think a lot of organisations have really thought about it. I don't think they have a policy a lot of the time. It does allude to the fact that organisations probably need to bring in some guidance for their employees and what they can use, because the nature of things is such that, and the connectivity of things, as you say, is you take your work laptop home. phone, you connect it to your home network, your TV's connected, your iPod's connected, all these things are now connected. And these devices can be managed, but you've got to know that they're there. And the security that's implemented corporately probably doesn't know what's on your home network. So that is taking things to the next level. So the question is, in the short term, do companies start to do some preventative in terms of what connects, or do they provide, as you say, the software for people to use on their home devices as well? I think it's a very, very good question.
There are solutions, of course, to this. They can segment the hard disks, they can use virtual machines, they can use sandboxes, different ways to keep the business separate from the personal use of what's on the device. And with a lot of end-user device management software beginning to see that become more common, are end-users' understanding of why that has to be in place, and how do we make this not just an advanced option, but make this the default option now for devices?
This is exactly the crunch time, because I don't think the end users really understand the need to do segmentation or to have separations on hard disks or sandboxing. To most users, it's boring and they're not interested. They just want to use their machine. They want to be able to connect their TV. They want to use their Xbox, or, you know, let their kids use their iPhone to run Minecraft. They don't really want to get into the nitty-gritty. And in a way, it is complicated. And I think it's a bit head in the sand things. But for organizations, for companies, publicly companies or government bodies, they have a duty to their citizens and their shareholders to protect that organisation, because it can be very costly to get attacked. They have to balance with the rights, effectiveness of their end users and in able to do their job, with their ability to bring, as you say, their own devices to attach to work devices. Every year on year it's becoming more blurred. There's going to have to be a point, the delineation between what you can run and what you can connect, or bringing in policies. Now, the thing about having a policy, it's only worth anything if you can enforce it. That is probably where we go next, in terms of discovering what people are doing, then working out a policy and then implementing that. But that implementation part also needs to be sold to the end users.
Simplicity is the key here. The moment you make it hard for an end user to do something, whether that be from a security perspective or badly designed software, they will find a way around it. And often they will justify it, and quite rightly so. How do we make security not so much a software product, a technical solution, but something that is just there, sitting in the background?
I think that's the biggest challenge. I think that has been the biggest challenge for the IT security industry for many, many years. It is so ingrained in what is required in organisations, but at the same time, it still is seen as preventing people doing things, preventing people do their jobs even. I think it's going to be very hard to move away from that. One thing I would say about ransomware, it has come down to the user and user level to such an extent where many, many people are being affected by it, that it's become, and the press have obviously taken a big interest in it. So that level of awareness and the repercussions of not having security are filtering down to everybody in an organization. So everybody's got a story who somebody got hit by ransomware and had to pay a ransom to get their data back. So I think that helps people realise how big a problem this is. But again, it's a case of making it simple. And at the moment, it's not simple. We have been trying to position intelligent whitelisting for many, many years. And it is the fail-safe way to stop malware running on an endpoint. But to implement it, most organisations have shied away from it because they feel it will be compromising what users can run, or the updates. How do you update it? You know, WebEx is this type of thing. So to try and enable a policy which people are able to still do their jobs, is that balance is very difficult, and it still is going to be for a while, I believe.
A lot of our response is reactive rather than proactive. We don't prevent malware, we deal with the consequences of malware. Why is it taking so long for the endpoint security industry to shift its focus?
If I'm honest, I think it's more the organisations have, unless they are highly secure, say military, financial institutions or central government, I think security has always been seen as a cost without any return on that investment. It's always been the poor relation in the IT world. But having more security doesn't make you more productive. So what happens is that it's like an insurance policy, and everybody's got varying degrees of insurance. Some people don't have contents insurance because they feel that they've got nothing worth stealing. Some people don't have pet insurance because they don't want to pay out for something that, if something happened to their animal, well, that's just the way things are. The thing about security, how much you want to invest in protecting yourself. What's happening now is that organisations are having to be seen to do more because the impact of not is becoming greater. That's the reality.
The cost of a cyber attack is not just about the money you have to pay out. It's about the reputational damage to your business. How are you seeing businesses evolve their incident response so they get the right information out to the right people, start the right remediation processes, rather than what we've seen from a number of high-profile attacks recently, a whole muddled story changing every 5 minutes, which doesn't help anybody.
I think more companies are putting into place the CISO, the Chief Security Officer role, simply because they are taking it more seriously now. And it's not just about implementing a solution to be secure. It's about incident response. And absolutely, if you've got the right incident response, then you can stop the impact of an attack. You can't necessarily stop it once it's got in to part of your organization. But if you've got the right response, and again, you know, I refer back to the fact that a service management solution is going to indicate very quickly if you've got an attack. If you get that information, you can then react more quickly and implement a big red button stop process to lock every applications down. I think companies are implementing a more complex or sophisticated incident response, because at the end of the day, if you're on breakfast time TV and you're asked whether the storage in your software is encrypted or not, if you don't know the answer to that and your CISO is not sitting next to you, you're going to be in for a lot of pain. And the publicity from that is very hard to win back people's trust, and it has implications on people's companies and stock markets.
Do you see companies looking to practice their incident response? We have fire drills. We have emergency drills in organisations. The damage that an incident response can cause suggests that one thing we should be seeing more of are executive courses to look at what a company has on its books for its incident response, get all the relevant people together, run through it first of all in a safe environment as you would a training course, but also then randomly execute this across the business when people are at home, when they're travelling, when they're asleep. Because without any of that, it's rather like, I have a backup, but if you've not restored it, you don't have a backup. Incident response, if you don't practice it, you probably don't have an effective incident response.
I don't think there is enough of it, and we don't, if I'm honest, we don't see organisations practicing that incident response. Maybe they don't share that information with us. Again, in our world, in our industry, they're fairly covert about certain aspects because they don't want to, even with us as vendors, they don't necessarily want to share what their overall security posture is, because in some way, by talking about, you're compromising to some extent. So we as a vendor, when we talk about solutions, we do talk about incident response, we talk about forensics, and we do talk about cleanup, because if something's happened, you've got to understand why it happened so you can prevent it happening again. Most of the time, we are often contacted after something's happened, and this has historically happened to us quite a lot as an organisation. In a way, it's a little bit frustrating, because often we would have talked to these customers or prospects previously, and when we're talking to them as a vendor, you're always trying to position that solution for that specific customer rather than position your product, so to speak. But fundamentally, you know, we have solutions that can stop most of these attacks, but people have got to understand how, and that's the first thing, it's education. People still don't understand a lot about IT security in general. Again, they're becoming more so because the impact of these attacks that are having is more of a profile within organisations right up to the CEO.
If I was to ask you to give me the 5 things that a company needs to think about and put in place in order to improve its security, what would they be?
5 things. Well, I would first of all say you need to understand what you have, what is on your network, what's connecting, and get that visibility. You then need to have essentially endpoint security, of course, which is a defense in depth strategy. So it's not one product, one vendor necessarily, but it's having a set of solutions around that endpoint security that can defend in depth from every aspect of the attack vector. That's endpoint security. Then you need to have your network security, perimeter security. Then you need to have policies around that, which are essentially what you want as an organization. And then finally is the incident response, it's the forensics, that side of things. So with that whole thing, you can see what you've got, you can put endpoint security in place, you can put network security in place, you can then have policies around that, who connects to what you're allowed to bring, and then a backup, which is if something does happen, what you're going to do about it.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ian.